come back to Texas. It's always good to come back here and sweat. Remember why I left in the first place. So it's really hot. Watch them work on the road still. You know, they say the sun's going to burn out in 6 billion years. That means I'll have to finish the roads in Texas in the dark, you know, because they'll still be working on them. Now, most of you know that I'm a psychologist by training. The first part of my life, I worked in the mental health clinic. I left the mental health clinic. One reason I left the mental health clinic, I couldn't tell the staff from the patients, except the staff had the keys. Other than that, I couldn't tell a whole lot of difference. The staff seemed to have as many problems as the patients had. So I have had a unique life. One week, I worked at a mental health clinic, and the next week, I worked at a Baptist church. People always say, is that a big adjustment? And I say, no, the staff still have the keys. But other than that, I can't tell a whole lot of difference. But I've met some interesting people being a psychologist. I met one guy that had a kind of combination of paranoia and guilt. He thought everybody was out to get him, but he thought he deserved it. And so another guy was so paranoid, he thought the people in front of him were following him. Now, that's paranoia, you understand. Actually, I told him that wasn't paranoia. You're just not too smart. And so, but my favorite patient was my 9 o'clock appointment on a Monday morning. Nicely dressed man came in and sat down, and I say what psychologists say. I said, how can I help you? He says, you can't help me. I'm crazy. I said, oh, how do you know that? He said, I've been to psychiatrists. They say I'm crazy. I said, well, what are you doing right now? If you ever want to be a psychologist and make money at it, here's some advice. Always find out what people are doing right now and don't advise that, okay? Because that's not working. They wouldn't be coming to see you. So you find out what they're doing right now and you tell them to do something else. See, that's how it works. So I said, what is he telling you to do right now? He said, he's telling me not to do anything. I'm crazy. I can't be helped. I said, okay, tell me your story. So he started telling me his story, and he had a pretty good story, as stories go, but I've heard every story that's ever existed. That's most of my life, that's what I've done. I've spent my life listening to other people's stories. Matter of fact, you can pray for me. One of my great fears is just before I die, somebody else's life's going to flash before me instead of my own. I spent all my time listening to their stories. And after this is over, if you want to tell me your story, I'll listen, but I've heard it. I've heard every story that ever exists. There's just about 10 stories and the names change. So I was doing what psychologists do. I was maintaining eye contact. I was leaning forward. I was saying, I can understand how you feel that way. I mean, I thought I was doing pretty good. About 20 minutes into the session, he gets up and starts to walk out. And he turns to me and says, you're totally incompetent. I thought you were one of the best. You're one of the worst. You don't even know what you're doing. I'm leaving. And he starts to go out the door. And I said, whoa, wait a minute. You call me incompetent? At least you could tell me why. He said, sir, it would be obvious to anybody, much less a so-called trained observer of human behavior like you call yourself. It would have been obvious to anybody. I have on 2 watches. They're identical watches. I bought them the same time, the same place. They've never been over a second apart. I raised this arm so you can see that watch. I raised that arm so you can see that watch. You never noticed. You never brought it up. I said, well, would you do something for me? He said, what? So I handed him my notepad. I always take notes when people talk. I handed him my notepad. I said, I want you to read what's on top of this notepad in big, bold letters. I want you to read it out loud. I handed him my notepad. He looked at it. He started to smile. I said, no, read it out loud. He read these words. This man has owned 2 watches. You said you noticed, didn't you? I said, not only did I notice, I know why you wear 2 watches. He got excited. He started to talk fast. His eyes got big. Whoa, why do I wear 2 watches? I said, because you're crazy. You told me that when you first came in here. He sat down. We had a nice little chat. And I told him that really just to get his attention, of course. And I told you the story just to get your attention. But if you do have on 2 watches, I'd slip one of them off, okay? The person beside you would be a lot more comfortable as we talk today. The pastor, David, when he called me, he said that you're in a series in the book of Jonah. And I told him that Jonah was kind of too down in the mouth for me to preach on, but that I would listen to last week's service. And we talked about the fact that Jonah was a runner. He ran from God. He got misaligned with God. And if you remember, the pastor told about how you can drift in the way you think. You know, it's pretty easy to drift in the way you think. I'm going to be speaking in Florida in a couple of weeks, and when I go to Florida, I just jump in the ocean. I just love, deep down, God's called me to preach, teach, and go to the beach, and so I just love to jump in the ocean. And so people say, well, what about sharks? Well, if you hear the music, get out of the water, you know, but otherwise, just kind of enjoy it, you know. And so I can remember the first time I got to be in the ocean by myself. I mean, I was with a friend, but my parents, you know, they stayed on the beach with the towels and the umbrella, and they let us go in the water by ourselves. And we thought we were big stuff. I mean, we were probably about 10, man, out in the ocean by ourselves, riding a wave, you know, big stuff. And after about 30 minutes of being in the ocean by ourselves, we looked up, and our parents are gone. I mean, they picked up the umbrellas and the towel. They're gone. I mean, they're gone. And then finally, I look, and a half a mile down the beach are our parents. They have picked up the umbrella and moved a half a mile down the beach. And then I looked at the hotel we're staying in, and the hotel has moved a half a mile down the beach. And then I thought, wait a minute, hotels can't move. And I realized I moved. I drifted, and I didn't even realize it. And that's the way it is with us. If we're not careful, we get out of alignment with God's plan for our life, and we don't even realize it. Now, Jonah, in the Old Testament, he is a runner. He wanted to run away from God because he realized God wanted him to do something in God's plan of redemption. Now, the New Testament, it's pretty clear. We are God's plan of redemption. It's all about us. We're it. We're God's team. We're the ones. So the New Testament then tells us, how do we have the power to do that? Because as a psychologist, I want to tell you, it's all about power. It's not about knowing what to do. It's having the power to do it. I mean, I've worked with thousands of people, and they all want to do certain things. They just don't have the power to do it. I mean, a drug addict wants to get off drugs. He just doesn't have the power to do it. A person doesn't want to get divorced. They just don't have the power to stay married. So we're going to talk about power. Now, this is going to sound like the History Channel here for a minute. How many of you remember when you actually had salesmen to come to your house and Amazon did not deliver everything? Just, you know, just a few of you. Okay, so the rest of you, this is like the History Channel. This is the way the world used to be in a galaxy, galaxy far away. People would actually come and sell things. And there was actually people who would sell vacuum cleaners. I mean, they would actually come to your door and sell vacuum cleaners. And they all had this routine where they would actually bring their own dirt. I mean, they would take dirt and throw it all over your house and just say, man, I mean. But then they knew they had this thing that could suck all that up and show you how wonderful it was. And that was their routine, and that's what they did. Well, this one particular salesman was just fantastic. Man, he was selling vacuum cleaners like crazy. But he was running out of prospects. So finally, the boss of the company said, look, you are so good. Said, look, we're about to run out of prospects in this area. But over across the fence down there on that other highway, there are some houses in the country. And they need vacuum cleaners too. And so it'll be a little more distance between the houses. You won't get sell as quite as many, but you can sell a lot. So I want you to go out in the country. You can do it. So he heads out there, and the first house is way back in the woods. He finally finds it way back in the woods. And so he gets in, and he's telling him, I'm selling you this, but I want to show you this back. And he starts putting dirt. I mean, he just starts throwing his dirt. And the old farmer said, don't you do that. Yeah, I'm going to show you, don't you do that. And so he just got dirt everywhere. So he gets the plug and he starts looking and he can't and he said, where's the outlet? And he said, the farmer, that's what I've been trying to tell you. We don't have electricity in this room. Well, all of a sudden you had a man with a lot of dirt and no power. Have you looked around America lately? A lot of dirt, no power. How do you receive the power of God? Well, it's pretty simple. It's in Acts chapter 1. It's actually the last thing Jesus tells us. He says, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and you will receive power to go to church a lot. Is that what it says? Nope. You will receive power to just do a lot of good things for people. Nope. You will receive power to be my witness. You will receive power because you are my redemptive plan for mankind. You are going to redeem people. You're going to do what I was doing when I was here. I'm leaving. I'm giving it to you. That's where the power comes from. Now, we, the church, many of us, we don't have much power anymore. Because we're using power for things like going to church. You see, we think Christianity is going to church, but actually Christianity is being the church. See, we are his instrument of redemption. So how do you receive power? Let's just take that word, P-O-W-E-R, and those of you who've heard me speak before know that I actually never finish a message. That's why David has to invite me back periodically. So P stands for purpose. Purpose is what gives you the passion, the emotion that puts your body into motion that will get you going to do the things you need to do. And our purpose is very clear when it talks about redeeming mankind. We are to be witnesses where? In Houston and Dallas and to the end of the earth. It doesn't say that in your Bible, but it should. Judea and Samaria and those kind of places. So we have to understand our purpose as a church is we are the franchise of God and Son. We are in the family business. We are now going to do what Jesus was doing because he's gone and this is what we do. So we have to figure out how do we run plays. If this is the game of life that we're called to do, how do we run the plays in order to redeem mankind? It's a lot like a football game. Can you imagine a football game where you go and pay lots of money and go through all the parking and you get there? And the team decides that they like huddles better than playing the game, you know. So we're just going to huddle on the 30, you know, and they huddle for a while. And it's a pretty long huddle, you know. You've been to some of those long huddles, haven't you? You know, it's a long huddle, but they, you know, well, I think it was a good huddle. You know, we got some new huddle songs and we got a sweet fellowship in our huddle. And so we're going to huddle again on the 50. You know, everybody, let's meet on the 50 and huddle again. So everybody meets on the 50. And boy, thank everybody for coming. Boy, we got a good crowd here in the huddle. And after about four or five huddles, the coach would probably send out a player and say, what are you doing? You have to run a play. You know, we're here to win the game. We're not here to huddle. You know, and you might say, well, we love our huddles. I mean, we got sweet huddle fellowship, and we just want to huddle. You know, coaches say you're fired. You get out of here. You know, you got to run a play. Well, we tried that, and boy, that wasn't good. You know, they hurt you out there. You know, we just want to huddle. You know. Nobody would want to see that game for sure. There would be no excitement. It'd just be boring, wouldn't it? You know, you ever asked a friend about church? Oh, that's boring. Well, that's a huddle I'll pass up. You know, see, our purpose is not to huddle. Our purpose is to run some plays. See, our purpose is to redeem mankind. So what does that mean? That means you all have a position. You see, if you don't have a position, you're really not on the team. I mean, you say, well, I'm a huddle there at Jersey. I'm on that huddle. I'm on that team at Jersey City. You know, God and Son, that's where I'm my team. Then I'd say, well, what's your position? What are you doing to help redeem mankind? Ooh, well, I go to the huddles. You're not really on the team if you don't have a position, you know. And see, your position will be different than my position. You'll be able to reach people I won't be able to reach. See, the world's a Ponzi scheme. The world says things like this: you can be anything you want to be. You can't be anything you want to be. You can only be what God designed you to be. See, it's like God's creation. He created you. He created the world. He created a cantaloupe seed. Why? Because it's going to be a cantaloupe. He created a watermelon seed. It's going to be a watermelon. Now, that cantaloupe seed can say this. This is America. I can be anything I want to be. I don't want to be a cantaloupe. I want to be a watermelon. They're bigger. They go to a lot more picnics. They get a lot more publicity. I am going to be a watermelon. So that cantaloupe seed could start on a watermelon training program. He could get the 7 highly effective habits of watermelons and know every one of them. He could get some Joel Osteen tapes and be a highly anointed, favored, blessed watermelon. Highly anointed, favored, blessed watermelon. Get some of those Rick Warren tapes. Be a purpose-driven watermelon. Purpose-driven watermelon. Get some of those subliminal, subterrestrial tapes. Play it underneath the ground while that cantaloupe seed sleeps. Play watermelon thoughts, watermelon thoughts, watermelon thoughts. Could go to a Tony Robbins seminar to walk on fire to prove I'm capable of being a watermelon. Go to some new age hotbed, channel up some 400-year-old guru, let him sit bow-legged, naked, and hum, and hold a crystal and look at his navel and hum watermelon thoughts, hum watermelon thoughts. Can go to psychotherapy, get in touch with your inner child. Maybe your inner child was a watermelon at one time. You can do all that. But when the cantaloupe seed comes out of the ground, what's it going to be? It's going to be a sorry, no good, dysfunctional cantaloupe. Because all you've done to it. But that's how God created it. See, you're to be what God created you to be. When the Bible says, take up your cross and follow me, that doesn't mean you have to go to the cross. Jesus went to the cross for you. That means you take up you, the cross that God's given you, the abilities he's given you, the personality he's given you to reach people that no one else could ever reach. You may be a cantaloupe. You may be a watermelon. You may be a kumquat. I don't know. You may be weird, but you'll reach other kumquats. That's the way it works, you see. But you're never more relaxed, and you're never more powerful. Just being the person that God created you to be. You see, most of us go through our entire life trying to impress people with what we do instead of serve people out of how God made us. Remember the story of Jesus and the disciples when he washed their feet? I'm a preacher's kid. I can remember hearing that story and thinking, why didn't the disciples wash their own stinking feet? I mean, haven't you wondered that? I mean, come on, guys. It's Jesus. Wash your feet. You know? But now I think I know. I mean, the disciples are just a bunch of preachers. You know, that's all they are, a bunch of preachers. You know? Hey, preachers are just like you. I mean, I look spiritual up here with my Bible. I'm as sorry and no good as you are, I promise. You know? Preachers, if you're around them, they're always trying to impress other preachers. You know? This is how many we had in Vacation Bible School. I mean, this is how many we had. I mean, we get this auditorium. Man, there's so many seats. Well, you know, I'm sure that's what the disciples were doing. They didn't even notice stinking feet. They're trying to impress each other. But Jesus, you know what the Bible says about Jesus? Knowing where he came from and where he was going, washed the feet of his disciples. You see, Jesus didn't have to impress anybody. He just served out of who he was. There's nothing more relaxing than just realizing that God created you different, but that difference will allow you to redeem mankind in your way, in the way he's created you. It may be different. You know, I use humor. I use speaking. That's what the gift God's given me. You may use something else, but that's where the power comes from, when we use it to redeem mankind. And you'll never be more stressed. You'll never be more anxious trying to be something that you're not. I had one of the most stressful days of my life when somebody thought I was somebody that I wasn't. Any of you know who Mark Lowry is? Anybody know who Mark Lowry is? For those who don't know, he's a singer, he's an entertainer, he's a comedian, and we happen to have the same last name. Matter of fact, his father's name is Charles Lowry, which is my name, so it's very confusing. Many places I go to speak, I don't really ever meet the people. They're booked through my office, and they fill out forms, and I just show up, and you know, I do what I'm supposed to do. I was booked to do a banquet in Austin, Texas. They hand me a folder before I get on the plane, and they tell me where I'm going, what I'm doing, who I'm speaking to, and all that. And this particular time, they handed me the folder. My daughter, it's a family business. A lot of my daughters work for me. And so she hands me the folder and says, this is what you're doing. It's a radio station involved with lots of churches and another entity. And you're going to kind of encourage these people. And then she said this. And the only thing different about this that's really weird is they called and asked if you could sing some songs at the banquet. And I told them you couldn't, you know. And that's all she said. Well, come to find out, that wasn't the whole story. Come to find out, they had called a week before and said, could Dr. Lowry sing some songs at the banquet? And they said, no. Well, they called back the next day and says, we'll pay him $1,000 more if he will sing 2 songs at the banquet. Well, they thought about that a minute, because that's $500 a song, right? You know. But then they remembered how I sing, and they said, no, he can't sing any songs at the banquet. And then, they laughed about it at the office, that one day they'd paid Dad not to sing, but never to sing, you know. But I didn't know any of this. I just knew that they handed me the folder, and they said, could you sing at the banquet? And we told them no. Well, I got to thinking about that on the plane. Why would somebody ask for me to sing? And then in the back of my mind, I thought, well, surely they don't think they booked Mark Lowry. I mean, that couldn't be. But it was in the back of my mind. I get to the airport in Austin, Texas. The pastor picks up my bag, looks me in the eye, and says, do you want me to call you Charles, or do you want me to call you Mark? I said, Charles would be good. And as we're walking to the car, my mind goes nuts. You know how you talk to yourself? You're calmly walking, but you are talking to yourself saying, "What? He called you Mark. This is a church that wanted you to sing. What if he thinks you're Mark? What if you're supposed to sing? What if, you know?" I'm just going slowly nuts as I'm walking calmly to the car. We get to the car. He puts my bag in the back. I get in the front, and there's a sheet of paper sitting on the front seat. I pick it up. It's the bio we send out. Charles Lowry, PhD, psychologist. He has to know who I am. He has the bio right here. So he's just stressed out. He's a pastor. I know how that is. Deacon's giving him a hard time. That's why Jesus went around healing, doing miracles, and casting out deacons. I understand that. I can give him some deacon stress relief techniques, things that helped me when I was a pastor, like put their name on your golf ball. That always made me feel better. Knock them out there about 300 yards. Even if you hit it in the water, it doesn't bother you that much. So I started to relax. Not for long. He turns to me and says, we have a mutual friend. I said, oh, who's that? He said, Larnell Harris. I know you've sung with him all over the country. I said, sir, do you think I'm Mark Lowry, the singer? He says, aren't you? I pick up the bio. Didn't you read this? I'm Charles Lowry, the psychologist. Then he said this. I thought you were both. At that point, what I wanted to say, and I didn't say, because I'm a man of God, okay? But what I wanted to say was, were you abducted by aliens and sprayed with stupid juice? You know, this guy thinks I'm a schizophrenic singing psychologist. I said, have you told the people that Mark Lowry's coming, your church? He said, I've told the whole city Mark Lowry's coming. I said, is there a tall building or a cliff somewhere close by? He said, why? I said, so we can jump off, that's why. I said, look, buddy, we're in serious trouble here. I'm a psychologist. You think you've booked a singer. Take me back to the airport. No fee, no problem. Get me out of here. He says, you're not going anywhere. He said, I got 1,000 people at this banquet and you're going to do it. He said, I'm going to take you back to the hotel. A staff member will pick you up in an hour. He takes me back to the hotel, and it's a great hotel. He thinks I'm Mark Lowry. I'm used to speaking at mostly Baptist churches, okay? How can I put this delicately? Because you're a Baptist church. Most Baptist churches are cheap. So I'm sometimes in a Motel 3. You ever been there? You know, you only get half the Gideon's Bible in a Motel 3. You got to put a quarter into bed to keep it from vibrating. You know, anytime the restaurant takes Blue Cross Blue Shield, you probably don't want to stay there. You know, I told one pastor, you're so cheap, you'd want separate checks at the Last Supper. Now that's cheap. You know, hour later, staff member picks me up, says, hello, Mark. And by then, I just say, hello. I get to the banquet hall. There's 1,000 people there. Pastor's wife meets me out front in the foyer, like, deal. She says, I know we've made a horrible mistake, but I want you to know the pastor's talked to lots of people. They've read your books. They say you're funny. He's starting to relax. I said, I'm glad he's starting to relax, because I'm going to the bathroom about every 10 minutes. Well, when it's my turn to talk, what am I going to say? Here's what I said. God is a sovereign God, and God looked down and saw your pastor, and God thought, that pastor, he thinks he needs a singer. That pastor doesn't need a singer. That pastor needs a psychologist. I'm sending Charles instead of Mark. It's interesting because we got response from a lot of people at that banquet. And they said, we did need a psychologist. We did need you to come. You see, when you understand that God has the power, that God's the one that says, when you go there, I'm going to bless there. Then you realize you're on God's team. You're part of redeeming mankind. So how does it all work? Well, God knows that you need a purpose in life. And he knows you need to be a part of his redemptive plan. A school system. They were hiring teachers, and everyone the teacher would be hired, the superintendent would take them and show them around. And he was showing this teacher, this other teacher's room that was the best teacher in the district, supposedly. They were kind of looking through the one-way mirror kind of deal, watching her. And the first thing she did is she said, you know, the room is real stuffy today. And Otto, I think we need the window raised. And that you're probably the only one strong enough to raise the window. Otto, could you raise the window for us? And of course, Otto gets up, you know, just pride and up that window. And the superintendent turned to the teacher and said, did you see what she just did? And she said, well, yeah, but I don't know why. He said, well, I'll tell you. He said, Otto's not very good academically. Matter of fact, Otto doesn't do well at all academically, but he's very strong. He's very big. And see, she didn't really need the window raised, but Otto needed to raise the window. See, God really doesn't need your help in his redemptive plan. But you need to be part of his redemptive plan, because that's what gives you meaning. That's what gives you power. See, it's not a burden. It's a blessing to be on God's team. In Dallas, we started a class for Dr. Criswell at First Dallas called the President's Class. We met in the Fairmont Hotel, and we started the class with 5 presidents of companies and their wives. We started in November, with a big kickoff in January. So the end of November, these 5 presidents and their wives, we met for the first time, and they said, you know, Christmas is coming up, and we want to thank you for doing this. So here's a little gift certificate for Christmas. Because we're at the Fairmont Hotel, these top business guys are coming, and, you know, here's a gift certificate, get you a new suit. You know, new suit. I said, great, thank you very much. I go home and open it, and it's $1,000 gift certificate. I'd just gotten there from South Carolina. This is 1985. And when I saw a $1,000 gift certificate, I thought, I will buy me 5 suits, you know, or maybe I'll just get me a car, you know. And I thought, there's no way a suit can cost $1,000. He said a suit, but it was a gift certificate to a particular store. And I went into that particular store, and I realized the cheapest suit there was $950. Okay, so with tax, I've got my gift certificate. I'm going to wear an old tie to go with this suit because I'm not. My wife called it the president's suit because that's the president's. The class bought it for me. I'll never forget the first time I wore it. I mean, it was like wool and silk. It had a real people's names in it. You know, mine has dry clean only now. But I'll never forget. I'd never worn a suit like that. I was so careful. I would even watch where I would sit. I would definitely watch what I would eat. You know, I was so careful. Why? Because I was wearing the president's suit. My friend, when you understand you're in the family business, you're an ambassador for Christ, then everything you do matters. It does matter what you eat. It does matter how you look. Why? Because you represent God's business, you see. That's when you start to have purpose in your life. That's when you start to have power in your life. I got to wrap this up. I don't know what time it is, but it's probably time to end. Okay, so I like to finish on time, so you come back. W stands for work. Most of your influence will come not in here, but out there. Okay? Daniel. The Bible says that there was a man named Daniel who was in a pagan country, and they served a pagan god, somewhat like our culture today. And Daniel said, look, I don't want to do the things that you do. You think that's a great way to live? Let's do a little test. Let me serve my God. Let me eat my way. Let me have my habits that serve my God. And then you let this group serve your God. And then let's evaluate after a little while and see which way works. What a winsome way to present God's business. And of course, you know what happened after a period of time? Daniel's group was 10 times better. You see, this way works. God's plan works. We have the good news for a great life. Now, the world's a Ponzi scheme. The world is always telling you, you can do this, or you can get away with this, or you can have this pleasure right now. And so you can get away with this for a while, and by the time that shows up, you're usually addicted to this, and it does you in. God's plan works in the long term. I speak all over the country, so I have to fly a lot. And so I go to airports because my arms get tired, you know. So and I'm always in an airport, and I love those airports that have people movers. You ever seen those airports with people movers? You know, they're like escalators on the floor, and they go and you go. I mean you make good time because they're moving, you're moving. Man, I like them. Man, you late for plane? You make good time. You know, I like them. But it's usually late at night. And there's a ball team, and it's usually like a group of like 16, 17-year-old males, okay? Any 16, 17-year-old males in here, I'm going to offend you just a little bit because you deserve it. 16 or 17-year-old males, their IQ is pretty much like plant life. I mean, it's like... It's like they make decisions and they tell you what they're going to do. And when they tell you, my thought is, did your IQ test come back negative? I mean, why would you even consider doing that? You know, 17-year-old males will say things like this: nobody is going to tell me what to do. I'm joining the Marines. So you got a group of some, and it's usually some ball team, and they're in the airport, and they decide to go down the people mover the wrong way. Why? Because we can. We're young and we're quick. Yeah. And so they do it. I mean, and they make progress. I mean, they have to work out a little bit, you know, because they're going the wrong direction. But they make progress. And they get to the end, and then they're laughing. You know, they're going to get out the wrong way. And they don't realize they're still standing on the people mover, you know. And it's taking them all the way back to where they came from. I can't tell you how many people in my life I've worked with. They say, I can do it my way. I want this pleasure right now, I'm going to get it. And for a while, hey, you can pull it off. But then you run into those people 5 years later, 10 years later. They've lost their job. They've lost their marriage. They're addicted to something they can't control. Their life is a mess. Why? Because God has the only plan that works for a lifetime, see? And we have that plan. We're ambassadors of that plan. We got the good news. So we need to be, E stands for encouragers. You be an encourager, people flock to be around you. Jesus was the greatest encourager ever lived. Even the lady caught in the very act of adultery, Jesus encouraged her. Go and sin no more. I think that life, the life of that lady totally changed. You be an encourager because we have the good news. Well, let me ask you, how many of you get too much encouragement? I mean, you're sick of it. You get so much of it. People clapping for you all the time, telling you how wonderful you are, how fantastic you are. Your kids carry around pictures of you in their wallet. These are my parents. I love my parents. Oh, you mean your kids don't carry around pictures of you in their wallet? I mean, you get so sick of this encouragement, you decide to get away from it. You get in your car and you drive off, and a policeman pulls you over and says, man, you're driving so good. I want to encourage you today. Let me give you some money today. Here's lots of money. Is that the way it works? No. In fact, most of us, probably even in here, are discouraged. And we need the encouragement of other believers to say, hey, we're on God's team. See, that's how teams make it. You know, they got to discipline, they got to practice. But we're God's team. This is going to pay off. Most of you know, matter of fact, a deacon out front reminded me of the cowboy joke I told last time I was here about there are going to be pallbearers at my funeral so they can let me down one last time. I am a cowboy fan. The paper ran a letter to the editor when Troy Aikman retired. A lady wrote and said she wanted to thank Troy Aikman, and she was told about what he did. She had a son named JP. JP had a fatal illness, and he was going to die before the year's end. He was a cowboy fan, so she wrote saying, you know, if some of the cowboys could kind of visit JP, that'd be great. And she said his favorite player is Troy Aikman, but I understand. And so anybody that can come with the cowboy, he would just be so excited. She said it was less than a week that three players showed up, one of which was Troy Aikman. Said they talked to JP and had a great time, gave him some cowboy stuff. And they're about to leave, and Troy turned to JP and said, anything I can do for you, JP? He said, man, Troy, if you'd just give me a football and sign your name, number 8 on that football, that'd be the best ever. He said, JP, not only am I going to get you a football, I'm going to score a touchdown and give you that football and sign it. And JP said, oh, that'd be so good. Well, they were playing in preseason at the time. Had a game that week in Mexico City, and they came back to Dallas to play in a preseason game at Oakland Raiders. Said it was hot August night. Troy Aikman was going to go play the first quarter. But the very first drive, they came down the field. They got to about the 13-yard line, and Aikman went back, and then he headed for the end zone. He was hit on about the 3-yard line by two big Raiders, but he somehow struggled and got in the end zone. Scored a touchdown, had that ball for JP. Said the next day he brought it, gave it to him, signed it. Said about a month later, they put it in JP's casket. She said, the sports writers were brutal. She said every sports writer was writing about the stupidity of Troy Aikman. Why a veteran quarterback would risk injury on a meaningless preseason game and try to score a touchdown of all things that meant nothing. But she closed the letter to the editor. Said, Troy Aikman's touchdown had nothing to do with a meaningless preseason game. He was playing for the heart of a dying child. Let me tell you about life. We, God's team, play the only game that matters. I love football. In the big scheme of things, football means nothing. Matter of fact, they asked Dwayne Thomas, what was it like to play in the Super Bowl, the ultimate game? He said, if it's the ultimate game, why will they play it again next year? Super Bowl is not the ultimate game. We play the ultimate game every weekend, because every weekend we play for the hearts of dying people. It's the only game that matters. And when you play God's game, He gives you the power to be the person He created you to be.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We pray that the truth of God's word is both encouraging and uplifting to you. If you'd like more information about our church, service times, or locations, or if you have a question about what you heard today and you want to connect with someone, I want to encourage you to visit us on our website at championforest.org. Have a great day, and God bless.